Welcome to the Frequency 49 show. I'm Paul MacDonald alongside Brian Davis, Deepak Gohill and Gary Rutledge. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, Paul. Hello.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Good. I could get used to this winning Mondays. We've got a 50% hit ratio on wins so far since starting this podcast.
I'd never looked at it that way. Well, 6 days ago, after benching Colin Kaepernick and sending Vernon Davis to the Denver Broncos, the San Francisco 49ers, with Blaine Gabbert at the helm, took on the Atlanta Falcons, while a half-empty Levi Stadium collectively held its breath. Turns out they didn't need to. Gabbert performed above expectation, completing 15 of 25 passes for 185 yards and two touchdowns. Sean Drone led the rushing with 58 yards from the 49ers' total of 133 along the ground. By comparison, the Falcons' rushing amounted to just 17 yards on the day. Defensively, Marcus Cromartie led with 7 tackles, and Navarro Bowman put the cape back on to record 6 tackles and 1 sack. What were your thoughts on the game as you saw it, Gary?
Well, I hate to say I told you so, but I think last week I was singing Blaine's praises, and I'm glad that he came through in the end for us. Was a bit squeaky bum time again at the end, but yeah, great to see us get that win, and a completely different team to what we've seen the last couple of weeks. So I know it's only one game down, and it's no need to start getting positive and thinking about playoffs, but good to see, I think.
It was definitely a different look, and you could tell straight from the beginning, couldn't you, Brian?
Yeah, I thought we still struggled on our first couple of drives, but after that, I think we kind of started piecing it together. I thought Gabbert played pretty well for the most part. You could probably say that it was a very Kaepernick or Smith-like performance for myself, really.
A couple of people have actually mentioned that. We've had lots of comments coming in, lots of questions. We're going to get to them very, very soon on all sorts of subjects relating to the game yesterday and the 49ers going forward. Deepak, what were your thoughts about the fact that although the 49ers won, it was a tight game, they didn't score at all in the second half?
Well, that's partially because they didn't need to. Atlanta's reluctance to score sort of helped us win the game. I think they missed the trick by electing to kick a field goal with almost 3 minutes to go on the 4th and 1 from the goal line, which gave us the ball after a kickoff. Whereas if they'd gone for the touchdown, I think that might have been a bit too much for us to claw back. So I think there's a lot of positive signs. I mean, you know, we're basically playing with players that nobody had ever heard of. Sean Drone, where did he come from? You know, it's almost a third string team. It's great that we got a win, more for the fans than anything else. I think you said earlier that the stadium was half empty, but that showed that there were some true diehards in there, and it was brilliant that we got a win for those guys.
There was comments about some booing that went on when Gabbert was taken out of the game to go through concussion protocol. Was it the fourth quarter that he got hit? I can't remember now. But he took a hell of a licking. It really was a massive hit. And I don't think anybody could fault the refs and the medical teams for actually insisting that Blaine Gabbert went through the concussion protocol. But there were a lot of boos. Do you think they were for the fact that Kaepernick was coming in the game that he was benched for, or just the fact that the referees were getting involved and people were like, no, just leave him out there?
I think it was more the referees. I think the way, you know, he got back up, he was, you know, ready to call the next play, and then it sort of dragged him off. And I think a lot more of it was that, the fact that, you know, if he'd been lying on the ground for 5 minutes, fair enough, but the fact he got up and was shook it all off, and that was great to see, because I think, you know, if he hadn't have responded that way, then it would have been a bit disappointing. But the fact he got up, took a real big hit, and was still back up and ready to lead the team showed that, you know, he's got some good qualities about him.
That was part of the knock on him in Jacksonville, wasn't it? The you know, he would get scared in the pocket, and then once he started getting hit, then he'd never look the same as what he did until we got hit. The fact that he bounced back up in the way that he did and was, you know, physically sort of kind of shouting and jostling with, you know, teammates and the referees to try and get back involved just shows that player that's in Jacksonville maybe isn't the player that, you know, we now have in San Francisco and Santa Clara, because yeah, actually got destroyed, didn't he?
I think we would have heard the boos for Kaepernick if he'd been intercepted on one of his throws. As it turned out, Kaep threw a beautiful pass that should have been caught. You know, it really should have been caught. So it's a shame that it wasn't completed. But if that had been picked off, then yeah, we would have heard the boos and we would have known exactly who they were aimed at too.
You've brought me to a great point, actually. The wide receivers, they were dropping everything yesterday, weren't they? And I know I think we got about 150 yards through the air, something like that. But there were nailed on catches. Vance McDonald was one of the big culprits for that. And what was going on with the wide receiver core? Is it just that it's a new quarterback, it's a different quarterback, and they're not used to catching from him? Surely they would have caught from him in practice.
McDonald's been useless since the day we drafted him. If you look at Gabbert's stats, 15 of 25, 185, two touchdowns, two interceptions, that was realistically more like probably 18 of 25 for close to 250 yards with two touchdowns, and it should only be one interception because of, you know, the drop that Simpson made was just ridiculous. You know, that was a, what, 30, 40-yard gain and probably a touchdown right there.
That said, though, you know, we've seen Kaepernick play games where receivers have dropped very, very basic, simple passes as well. But I do agree with you. I think our receiver core let us down a little bit. Most disappointing play for me was Simpson. It was in stride. It was a well-thrown ball, totally on the money. And somehow he just couldn't hold on to it. And then he spikes his helmet on the sideline in a display of petulance that I thought was quite unacceptable, really.
Yeah, and it's not like Gabbert's throwing him in the same way that Kaepernick does when he's throwing fastballs at, you know, 50, 60 mile an hour at him. Gabbert was, he was leading receivers into catches. He was throwing nice, you know, back shoulder throws. You know, some of these catches that were dropped Sunday night were just unacceptable, really. You know, there's no other word for it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It was very much a case of the ball being juggled by the receivers rather than, you know, like a hot plate coming out of Kaepernick's hand. So it was, and I think Jerome Simpson had an awful game. I think two or three of the catches dropped were down to him. So very disappointing to see.
They were great throws as well, weren't they? It's, you know, it's not as if the receivers were having to try and pick one out from behind them or something like that. These balls were going to right where they were supposed to be, and they were just flying through the receiver's hands.
I think we need to recognise something here. I think whilst we've all been talking about Cap and his misadventures, you know, Blaine Gabbert's been doing his job on the training field. You know, you can't just come off and play like that off the bench without putting something into his game during practice. And I think it's probably a testimony to his professionalism. I'm not saying that Blaine Gabbert's our saviour, because it's just one game, you know, but the fact that he more than did a capable job suggests that this kid has put some legwork into his game.
Well, Mark Lyons asked that very question, actually. Is Gabbert the messiah, or do we need a larger sample size before we can properly evaluate?
Yeah, you can't make a decision after one game. It's way too early. You know, Atlanta aren't the strongest defense. So, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves here. We've got some tough tests coming up in the next couple of weeks after the bye. Let's give him three or four games and then reflect back on, you know, what we've seen as a larger sample size.
Interesting, Gary. Do you think he's going to get the three or four games? Or do you think Cap will go back in after the bye?
Well, no. I mean, how can you drop him after that performance? He, you know, one mistake, I think, on the interception, and it wasn't an awful throw. It was just a good pick off by the receiver. But you know, the other one, as we said, was not his fault. So steady performance. It's a winning side. Why would you change a winning side when hardly any mistakes have been made?
Sure. I think the coaching staff will get even more fans' backs up if they start fart-arsing about with Kaepernick 1 week, Gabbert the next week. You know, Gabbert the week after that, Kaepernick maybe back in again. They've made their decision now. And let's face it, they've already pushed Harbaugh out the door. Now they're close to pushing Harbaugh's quarterback out the door. So I think the likelihood is that we will probably see Gabbert for the foreseeable future. And that's the way that the team move forward.
This is the main reason that Kaepernick got the job in the first place after Alex Smith was injured. Alex Smith came back and was ready to play. And Coach Harbaugh said at that time, nope. If Kaepernick is playing great, Kaepernick has the job. If Kaepernick starts playing badly, it goes back to Alex Smith. Alex Smith never played again.
Well, I was under the impression that Kaepernick's benching was for one game only, to give him 2 weeks of breathing space to see the game from a different perspective. But with the way that the Gabbert played the game, I think it would be a terrible injustice to bench him. I think he's deserved the opportunity to start again. There's no doubt about that, you know. And if he didn't get to start again, I think what we're trying to do is either showcase $14 million a year worth of talent rather than trying to do what's right by this team and its fans.
Yeah, and it's not going to get any tougher than Seattle away. We've seen how Kaepernick can go to pieces in those kind of games. So let's have a look at Gabbert up there. What's the worst that can happen? The mindset of the fans' view is going to be, we're probably going to lose up there. So the worst we can try and do is put Gabbert in and see what happens. He might adapt to that amazingly and have another, you know, relatively solid game, and we push them close, or maybe even go one step better and come away with a win.
I agree with you. I think it'd be a more interesting measure of Gabbert's capabilities to see how he bounces back from, you know, a difficult game. And they don't come harder than Seattle away, do they? And we historically never do well there. So I think that would be a good litmus test to see how Blaine Gabbert would handle that if he was to start subsequently after that.
And let's not forget, it's not just all on Gabbert. You know, he wasn't sacked at all. And yes, there was some good escapes from pass rush, but the offensive line actually stepped up in this game. And, you know, it's nice to finish a game without seeing our quarterback on the floor.
Yeah, I thought they were good in pass protection. Maybe not so great in the run blocking.
Do you think the O-line stepped up their game, or do you think the fact that Gabbert's release was a lot quicker than Kaepernick's, he didn't need as much time to get rid of the ball, that was the reason why we had so few sacks? No sacks yesterday.
Well, Gabbert stood strong and very tough in the pocket as well, didn't he? There are times where you could see the pocket collapsing all around him, and he stood in there and delivered the pass. Kaepernick, in the past, you know, one of the faults there would, he would get spooked and he'd be gone. You know, he wouldn't stand in there and make that second or third read and find his second or third receiver. Once his first guy wasn't there and that pocket came crashing in around him, he was adjusting on the fly and going for it, which it kind of worked for him in that first sort of couple of seasons. But after that, he just looks, for large parts of this season, he's looked like a shadow of his self. And I thought that was a lot of credit was due for Gabbert yesterday for being, you know, that strong and that tough in the pocket for pretty much most of the game. And he's actually got some wheels as well, hasn't he? Who knew? 33 rushing yards. I mean, I was 5 yards away from treating Gary out to a complete day out on the sauce.
Oh, believe me, I was fingers crossed at the end, like, he was going to get those 5 yards.
But so we've seen Gabbert play what was more or less like an Alex Smith type game management role, and you know, there's no denying Kaepernick's ability and talent. Okay, he lit the stage up when he played, and for him to regress so much. Blaine Gabbert, who's being touted as the laughingstock of the NFL, to not just compete in but win an NFL game off his own steam. Do you think that it's a confidence thing with Kaepernick? It's without confidence he can't play, because Gabbert, my craft has got me saying Gabbert now. Gabbert was playing with confidence, and he was making tough plays because he felt he had the confidence to do it. Whereas Kaep has got all the ability in the world, but we've talked about him being a deer caught in the headlights under certain circumstances. Do you think it's just purely down to a lack of confidence and nothing else?
I think it's, you know, being on a losing side does destroy your confidence, and, you know, getting beat up week after week is gonna knock you. And I think we're actually in a great position now where we've got Gabbert, who's got something to prove, and he's stepped up this week and shown that he has got some ability despite all the naysayers. And hopefully we've got a backup quarterback in Kaepernick who, you know, he's desperate to get back in the team. And I think we might have seen that with the two plays that he did come in for. That throw on the second play was an excellent throw. And I think he came in with a, you know, I don't know how long I'm going to be in, but if I can get, you know, a good throw, a couple of completions, maybe a touchdown, then I get back in the starting lineup. And, you know, it's definitely healthy to have some quarterback competition rather than number seven going down on the team sheet first every week.
Exactly. And I think that might have been beneficial to Kaepernick in the long run, was to have some competition for his job instead of being given the keys to the car from day one.
Being cynical, are the coaching staff building that confidence in Gabbert and at the same time taking that away from Kaepernick?
I think you are being cynical. I think no, and I can see where you're coming from. I think Gabbert's performance was down to him working very, very hard in practice, practically invisible, laughingstock of the NFL. But you know, he's put a shift in every single time. Otherwise, he wouldn't be able to play to this level of competency. Because whilst it was mostly high percentage plays, got to realize he still executed them with confidence. You know, he was not afraid to run with the ball. He knew when to run. He knew where his receivers were going to be. You know, he had a savvy game. And again, I'm not saying he's the answer to our problems, but what I am saying is it was refreshing to see that level of play. High percentage football, you know, basic stuff, keep it simple and execute. And you can't ask for more.
I think the connection with Selleck probably showed that that's probably two guys who have spent a hell of a lot of time together on practice fields and in scout teams working together. Yeah. And they probably brought that connection straight off the practice field into the game on Sunday. I mean, no one in their right mind would have predicted that Selleck would have scored two touchdowns on Sunday night. If you did, then send me your lottery numbers this week.
And it's a good point that, you know, we had a backup team in there. We had two new running backs, you know, two new tight ends that haven't really been used this season, a new quarterback. And the chemistry was, you know, there were certainly signs of good chemistry there. So that's, you know, with a bye week and some time to practice that on the practice field is, you know, you hope that when we come back out in 2 weeks' time, we're going to look even better.
Let's not forget, you know, that whilst the offense did their job, even though, albeit scoreless in the second half, you know, it was because we actually gave our defense a chance to rest, that they could perform when they had to and make the plays when we needed them to make them. So I think the defense has to take a huge amount of credit for this win.
Yeah, and I think, sorry, just to jump in again there, I think making positive decisions on the O-line is going to benefit Gabbert again, I think, because we can see that they're still moving, you know, Devy and Pierce and those guys all around in at right guard. You know, they brought Trenton Brown in at right tackle on Sunday and pushed Pears inside. I think what they need to do there is just make a decision and kick Pears probably out the team completely. Put Tiller in at right guard, who seems to be holding up relatively well compared to what we've seen Pears do. And then, you know, give this Trenton Brown a couple of starts at right tackle and see what happens. Yeah. Because they were forming solid pass protection at times on Sunday night. And, you know, that was refreshing to see, especially if you've got a quarterback now who will stand up in that pocket and deliver the pass on the money for the majority of the time, as he did on Sunday night.
It'd be interesting to see his relationship with Torrey Smith and if he can sort of make the big plays, because that was the other thing that impressed me about Gabbert. He wasn't afraid to take a shot and have a go at making a big play.
No, I think and one thing that the fans have got to realise is he's not going to gun it down the field in the same way that Kaepernick can easily unleash a 50, 60-yard rocket. He is a bit more of a weaker-armed quarterback, and we're not going to be forcing, you know, massive game-changing plays downfield. I think it's all going to be a more kind of West Coast offense based off, you know, offense where we're moving it in sort of chunks down the field, dumping it off to the running backs, hitting receivers out in the flats, coming across the middle with your tight ends, and it's going to be that kind of offense moving forward, which would probably play more to Gabbert's strengths than it would be if he's forcing the ball 30, 40 yards down, you know, sidelines, testing cornerbacks one-on-one.
Too bad he's injured, because this kind of offense would suit Reggie Bush.
Yeah, probably would. Yeah, you're probably right on the money there.
Looking elsewhere on the field, the defense did have a pretty good day. They held the Falcons to just 17 yards rushing, as we said before. Bowman had a great day as well. Neil Jepson wants to say that at times he looked like he was back to something before he got injured. Do you think he can keep this up for the rest of the season, or is he likely to run out of gas because he's made so many tackles already?
No, I think he's, you know, he's had a year off. He's, you know, he's hungry. He wants to get back into it, and he's not the player that he was, you know, the season before last. But I'd say he's 75% of the way there. You know, he got a good sack, and I think it was one play. I think it was late in the fourth quarter where he came. I don't know how he wasn't offside, but he came flying through that line, and it was only by pure chance that Ryan got rid of the ball. Otherwise, he would have actually flattened him again.
I think that's an interesting with Bowman that at times he's looked almost a step slower than before, but this time it really did look like Superman had got his cape out and started playing again. And long may it continue. He's a true leader. We need this guy on our team. You know, and just his presence alone, I think, gives our team a huge lift. Incredible performance by Bowman.
Yeah, I think he's closer to maybe 95% than 75% right now. I think that was clear to see Sunday night that he was probably somewhere close to the player that we've, you know, become to know and love over the last few seasons. And I think the bye week now is probably the perfect time for him to come into those tough games that are coming up now and be probably as close to the player that, like I said, that we've become to know and love than we've seen for, you know, the previous 9 weeks of this season already.
He definitely was kind of rusty, wasn't he, at the beginning of the season and in the games run up to sort of the last few, but now he's got into his stride, he's got his pace back.
Yeah, and he's never going to be fantastic in coverage, was highlighted on the big pass play to Julio Jones right before halftime on the only drive that they scored their touchdown from. But, you know, that was just Atlanta Falcons playing a hurry-up offense and trying to take advantage of, you know, the matchups that they were putting on the field at the time. That isn't going to happen too many more times this season, hopefully.
I think in defense of that, you know, that we had three brand new cornerbacks in, so, you know, our pass coverage was never going to be the greatest. But I think Fox put a stat up, and Bowman's got the second most tackles in the NFL this season. And like you said, Paul, for someone who started the season off trying to get back to full fitness, that's an amazing place to be after 8 weeks.
Apparently, this was a bit of a grudge game for him. Who knew he had a grudge against the Falcons? I think it's to do with being drafted or something, or not drafted by them. But apparently, this game had a special edge to 53. Well, I'm really glad that it did, because he played lights out. He was the Navarro Bowman we know.
One of the areas that the 49ers have struggled all season, and it showed again yesterday, special teams. Cat Victorino has said special teams have been given the opposition great field position all season. What's going on with them?
I don't get this, and I think we said this in the first podcast, that the punt return is really, you know, we've gone back to Ellington and I think there was 8 punts and he only returned one of them, 7 fair catches. And that's, you know, that's not helping us. And that is, you know, really putting us back deep and meaning that we've got to sustain long drives, you know, to try and get some points on the board. So yeah, I think on the other side of the ball, you know, special teams just isn't as strong as we had. I know we've lost LJ McCray, who was one of our top performers last season. But it's just, yeah, it's not where we want to be with special teams. Still some work to do there.
Yeah, and Pinion hasn't had a great season again. He seemed to start off so strong as well, but he hasn't looked anywhere close to how he started off this season as well. So, you know, he's not booming the 50, 60-yard kicks downfield that, again, we've become so accustomed to seeing Andy Lee. You just take for granted when you've got a punter of Andy Lee's quality that he's going to get the job done 99 times out of 100, whereas this new guy coming in, he is struggling a bit at the minute, and I think that was pointed out by the telecasters last week when they said that, you know, at the times when the team is suffering, you don't want your punter kind of wimping out of games. He's got to get out there and suck it up and, you know, get on with it and play through the pain.
I agree with what Gary said, actually. I think our offense is under a tiny little bit of extra pressure to make sure that we can get far down the field. Because when it comes to fielding punts, we are pegged deep into our own territory. And invariably, nothing good happens when that happens. So there is a lot of work to be done on special teams. And I hope we can fix that because, you know, there's some good work from the offense yesterday. Really good work.
Okay, so the 49ers are now 3-6 on the season going into the bye. A couple of our fans, of our listeners, are starting to look at sort of the end of the season and beyond the end of the season. Simon Jowett has asked, if this season is the disaster it's looking likely to be and Sean Payton becomes available, should we consider making a move for him or do we stick with Tom Sula?
I've got a number of points on this question. Will he actually work with Jed and Balke? You know, are Jed and Balke actually going to spend the money that he's going to command? You know, this is a Super Bowl winning coach and a coach who's only had 2 losing seasons dating back to 2006. You know, how much personnel choice would he actually want? I think he'd want quite a lot. And he might be the type of coach who's he'd probably fancy working with an established quarterback who's already in place. In terms of positives, you know, he's got the experience. He's a Super Bowl winner. He's from California. And he's already turned around a franchise that were dead in the water when he went into New Orleans to take over them after the, you know, Hurricane Katrina. So he's got a lot going for him.
And he played for the Leicester Panthers. So
exactly, which is right up Deepak's neck of the woods. But I would love to see him on the 49ers sideline. I just don't think we're going to spend the money. I think he's going to want too much control, and Trent, you know, with his ego, he's not going to let that happen.
I agree, Brian, but I also think, you know, if we can sort of dream about this a little, Peyton would probably want his own people in there as well. And that leads to a really exciting prospect of what he could actually do with this team. I think on paper, he would be a superb choice, but I can't see front office wanting to have another no man as opposed to a yes man. I think the next coach, if there is going to be a next coach, will probably be another yes man.
Do you think that Peyton's as good as he is because of Drew Brees? And do you think he can replicate that somewhere else? Or is he only as good as he is because he's had Brees, you know, pretty much all his career as a head coach?
That's a really good question. It's hard to tell, isn't it? Because, you know, Drew Brees is going to the Hall of Fame. There's no doubt about that. I think Peyton does have his merits because he was suspended for a year, wasn't he? Or he disappeared for a year.
Yeah, 2012. Back. That was after the Bounty Gate, after the 49ers game, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a little tainted part of his CV there. I think if he wasn't that good, they wouldn't have called him back. They would have just got rid of him.
But there is talk that, well, his contract is up at the end of this season anyway.
He's got an out clause, hasn't he, this off-season.
He's looking to go elsewhere. If Sean Payton is out of the picture for the 49ers, if he's not the right coach for the 49ers, and let's say Tom Sula doesn't stay around, who, if you could pick any coach, who would you pick?
Jim Harbaugh.
Belichick. Yeah, I don't think he's coming back somewhere else.
Now you're asking us to think of coaches who are unemployed on the fly.
Do you know what? I would just say, I mean, he'll never ever come, so this is just fantasy football. I'd say Gruden.
John Gruden. As opposed to Jay Gruden.
He'll never come. He's got a cushy life in the media. He did really well with the Raiders as well. Sorry, the Buccaneers. I would just love to see him have one go with us, but it's not going to happen.
I think, again, Deepak, he's one of those personalities that wouldn't work with Trent and Jed. I think we'd never see that.
It's true, but who would? Who would in this modern game work with such an egotistical owner and a general manager who
is more than that? I think there's coaches out there that, you know, maybe being promoted up from offensive or defensive coordinator and want to, you know, make a name for themselves, and they're probably the people, you know, we'll be targeting with the kind of owner and GM we've got. I don't see an established head coach who's used to making his own decisions come into us.
Yeah, that's why I think ultimately we probably will miss out on someone like Sean Payton if he was available, because he's not going to come cheap. He's the kind of guy that he's going to want a relatively good amount of control over the team, and I just can't see, you know, like Deepak says there, I can't see Trent and Jed letting them do that unless Jed makes the decision to part ways with Trent and we go completely forward with somebody else as the GM, who then instates his own head coach.
But then, Brian, would we get another GM who's going to be a clone of Trent Baalke, i.e. another yes person? And this is the thing. I think what we're driving at here is that Jed only has one job, and that's to own the franchise. Let the GM be a GM. Let the coach be a coach, and let the players play. You know, he can't have his hand in every section of the business.
No, Jed is unfortunately surrounded himself with businessmen and not with football men, which is ultimately why the season and the state of the franchise is going right down the Swanee, because he's got the wrong people surrounding him. He, like you say, he's got all his yes men around him who aren't, you know, they're scared of him ultimately. You know, that they still want their roles within, you know.
But if you think about it, Brian, you know, if we could get a tantalizing coach like a Gruden or maybe a Sean Payton, and a GM that knows how to work the draft, is networked in, has got good scouting skills, we've got a shed ton of draft choices as well that could really, really elevate a rebuild into a franchise that's going to gain not only stability, but rediscover its pedigree as a winning franchise. You know, there's a lot of raw ingredients in place if we manage to do some of the front office manoeuvres in the right direction.
Yeah, I think I can tell you exactly who the 49ers will hire if they decide to part ways with Jim Tomasulo in this offseason.
Okay, who's that?
He's already on the coaching staff.
That's my mate.
Eric Mangini.
Yeah, I was going to say the Manginius.
That is the cheapest, most Jed York style of football that is out there. That is probably exactly what's going to happen if they do part ways with Tomasulo.
One of the points that I wanted to make was that with this combination that we have right now of owner and GM, are we actually resigned to only being able to recruit from inside and to be able to promote from inside? Is that what we're stuck with?
Well, okay. I think Jed York takes his football counsel from Trent Baalke. Okay, so if you get rid of Baalke, or if Baalke leaves or is pushed out the door, then Jed is going to have to trust whichever general manager he hires. And going back to what Brian said about Mangini becoming the next coach, you know, if that was to happen, we all know what would happen next, don't we? Same thing. Looking for another chief head coach, and another one, and another one. The franchise clearly cannot sustain itself by appointing within, because we don't have a Mike Holmgren anymore that could readily step up and become a head coach and be competitive. We don't have another George Seifert. We've got nothing.
No, but a Mike Holmgren or a George Seifert is exactly who Jed should be getting in and appointing as some kind of football president, or make some bloody roll up for him that gets him involved in the day-to-day running and the oversight of what's going on in front office. He's a football man with Bay Area ties, with more than the best interests of the team and the franchise at heart. Someone like that is the most obvious and perfect candidate to come in and have a look at what the hell's going on and try and push Jed and Trent in the direction of where the team needs to be going. Not in the way that Parag Marath and those guys are trying to push the team in, which is just about making money, money and more money.
Well, I think they did that with Bill Walsh, didn't they, in the 2000s? They brought him in that sort of consultancy role and, you know, tapped into that all that experience and knowledge. And, yeah, we should be looking at somebody who's got that kind of history and can just give a younger coach some guidance and help the rebuild.
Do we know anybody that's a young version of Bill Walsh?
No.
what about, I mean, I don't know, it might be controversial, what about someone like Mariucci? I know he's got his
commitments,
but, you know, he was, you know, a successful coach. He still loves the team, and there's a lot of knowledge there that I think we could gain from him.
Yeah, I don't know whether Mariucci would go back as a head coach. I think, he'd be the kind of guy that I just said about there with Holmgren, who comes in as some kind of football president or something.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You have him in that role as an advisor.
So. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And the more people, the merrier, really, especially those with 49ers ties, you know, back to the successful era.
I think Mooch would make an outstanding... I still think he'd make a superb head coach. I also think he'd make an equally good general manager as well, because...
Yeah, definitely.
Mooch, like you said, he ticks that box where not only is he a football person, but his roots are dear to the Bay Area and the team itself. You know, he's always been very partisan about this team. So I think he would be an outstanding selection. He would totally get my vote, you know, totally.
Yeah, and he's got a massive network of people from not only his coaching tree, but, you know, the line of work that he's in now with his TV and radio gig.
Yeah. We should get him on the show.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll assign that one to Brian.
Done.
Right, gents, it's that time of the show where it's time to rattle through the two-minute drill. Are you ready?
Earplugs ready.
what are you saying about my volumes? It was a little high last week. Let's hope we've got it sorted this week. Okay. Brian, what made the difference this game? Game plan, play calling, execution, or other?
This is the easy option. It was a little bit of everything for me, wasn't it? Well, I think we've covered a lot of that already, really.
Okay. Yeah. Gary, was Gabbert the reason the offense performed better, or was the offense the reason that Gabbert performed better?
No, I think Gabbert was 75% of the reason why, and the O-line stepping up and supporting the new quarterback was the other 25%.
Deepak, do we have a chance to improve with him under center?
Yeah, I think there may well be another game that we could win. Cleveland springs to mind and Chicago springs to mind.
What about next year, Brian?
Next year? We've sent a few links to this, I think, over the last sort of, well, over the last 24 hours or so. Who knows? Potentially, if there's no quarterback in the draft, we could potentially go with Gabbert for next season, build in the draft and free agency in the trenches, and maybe there's a quarterback there in 2017.
Gary, is Bowman back to full strength? We've kind of discussed this already, haven't we?
Yeah, I think I said earlier on, I said 75, Brian said 95. He's not quite there yet, but he's still a beast and a great leader on our team, and he can only get better, which is just amazing for us.
Deepak, new running backs, hit or miss from the early view this week?
Sean Drone, hit just for the name alone, but that guy put in an effort. I think he flew out of Cleveland on Monday, knocked on Tom Sula's door and said, give me the playbook, I want to play. Played with heart. He's got my vote. Hit.
Brian, who's starting under center next week in 2 weeks' time?
Gabbert.
And Gary, last one to you. Three teams are currently 8-0 on the season. Broncos, Pats and Panthers. Who's the most likely to finish the season unbeaten?
Oh, saved by the bell, 2 weeks in a row. definitely going to say Patriots. I think they look amazing. Brady just seems to be getting better with age rather than older.
Can you see them going all the way to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, certainly can. But the Panthers look a good team. I really thought Green Bay would bounce back this week. So, and I think Panthers have got quite an easy run in now. So, they could both end up there, I think.
Sounds good. Right, normally that would be the end to the show. But because there's no game to preview next week in our preview show, what we're going to do is we're going to run through our pick sixes now. Because it's already started on the group page. So we've got our games sorted. Thanks to everyone that voted for games. First game in the 6 o'clock segment here in the UK, Cowboys at Buccaneers. Let's go with Gary first. Who have you got in that one?
Oh, it's a tough one. I think I'm going to edge the Cowboys. They don't look as bad as I thought they would under Matt Castle, and I don't think Romo's back next week, but I think the Buccaneers have been pretty terrible at home, so yeah, I think I'm going to edge for the Cowboys in this one.
That's Cowboys for Gary. Deepak, what about you?
I picked the Cowboys for the last 2 weeks to win, and they haven't. How can anybody lose against Tampa Bay? Third time's a charm, Cowboys for me.
Okay, and Brian?
What the hell? Tampa Bay, come on.
Was that just
if I'm going to go down, I may as well go down in flames now, hadn't I? I've done awful at this in 3 weeks now, so let's mix it up a little and see what happens.
Yeah, what's the excuse this week, bro? You've been back now for 2 weeks?
No excuse. I'm just rubbish at picks. I have no excuse. I hold my hands up. I am absolutely rubbish at picks. My pick-ems, since we actually started this, since there's been pressure on me to deliver picks on a podcast, I've been awful. I was doing really well until we started doing this on my pick-ems on Yahoo.
Still 8 weeks to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Imagine the damage you could do. I can't see past the Cowboys on this one. Even though the Cowboys have been diabolical and the Buccaneers are at home, it's got to be the Cowboys for me. Next game, Bears at Rams. And let's go with Deepak first on this one.
Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. The Rams are going to win, even though they're playing in an empty stadium.
And Brian?
No. The Rams weren't particularly great on Sunday, were they? Let's go with the Bears.
Ooh, and Gary?
I keep picking these Jekyll and Hyde Rams, and as Brian said, they weren't great on Sunday, but I'm going to say at home, with their dangerous outfield, they're going to wrap this one up.
I've got to agree baseball. With you on that one. I've got to go with the Rams at home in this game. Was somebody going to say something, Anne?
No, Gary said they're dangerous outfield. I said it's not baseball.
Ah, right.
there's more divots in it than that concrete surround. That's what I meant.
The last game in the 6 o'clock segment that we've got is the Dolphins at the Eagles. The Dolphins are looking awful at the moment. Gary, who have you got?
I think the Eagles on this one, just going to edge it. Dolphins did look like they had signs of life, but yeah, the last 2 weeks they've died again. So yeah, I think the Eagles, who were on an upward trend, are going to get this one at home.
Brian?
Even I'm not stupid enough to pick the Dolphins. I'll take the Eagles.
Yeah, I think Philadelphia, they came off a difficult win away to Dallas, and that division is looking interesting now. Philly by a mile. They won't struggle.
Philly by a mile. Should I pick the Dolphins then, just to buck the trend? No, even I can't pick the Dolphins. Eagles all the way for me. Next game we have got is in the 9 o'clock segment, the Vikings at the Raiders. And let's go with Brian first.
Do you know what? Every time I pick against the Raiders win. Every time I pick the Raiders to win, they lose. So let's go and say that the Raiders are going to win this week.
Okay, so the Raiders at home. Gary?
Yeah, I keep getting my fingers burnt with the Raiders as well, but they push Steelers all the way this week. So I'm going to say at home, yeah, the Raiders are going to pick up the W.
And Deepak?
Easily the Raiders. They're playing in Oakland. They were unlucky to lose against Pittsburgh, and they are going to be the AFC's team next year. They're building on it. You can see something happening over there in Oakland.
They've got this receiver called Crabtree. Scored 2 touchdowns on Sunday. It's only signed a 1-year deal there. Maybe it's someone we can have a look at in the offseason.
Yeah. Raiders. I think they're gonna win this.
I have to say that the Raiders are impressing at the moment. It's not a nice thing to say as a 49ers fan, but the Raiders are impressing. I've got them at home as well. The fifth game that that everyone picked is the Patriots at the Giants. Patriots are going in unbeaten, going into New York for the Giants. Deepak?
This could be one of those at any given Sunday games, but it's not going to be that Sunday. New England are going to win this.
And Gary?
Yeah, as soon as I said I thought the Patriots are going to go 16-0, I'm guessing I'm going to have to stick with the Patriots.
And Brian?
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be any New York Giants wide receiver catching the ball in their grill or something and taking it in for a touchdown in this one. I think I think the Patriots are probably going to try and get some kind of revenge on the Giants in this one and try and push for the perfect season.
That's a sweep for the Patriots. I've got them as well. Last game, Sunday Night Football. This is one of those games that neither of us wants to pick, and Kev Nalen will probably want the stadium to explode in a ball of fire or something like that and go for the tie. Cardinals at Seahawks. Brian?
Is this where the North Korean Air Force come in? I'm going to take Seattle, I think.
Seattle at home. Deepak?
This could be 50-50. I think the Cardinals want it more than the Seahawks do. The Cardinals are very strong. To shade it in Seattle. It's not going to be easy, but I think the Cardinals might just squint this.
And Gary?
Yeah, definitely a coin flip game, but I think Seahawks at home are going to rediscover some of that form, and yeah, I'm going to go for Seahawks.
We're splitting this one down the middle. Cardinals are 6-2, Seahawks are 4-4. I've got to go with the Cardinals on this one. So that is our picks for this week's Pick 6. Make sure that you get yours in nice and early, so that you are involved in the Pick 6 Challenge. It's going really well so far. It's been really good fun doing so far. I mean,
well, for everybody, yeah. Brian, yeah.
And me.
Well, I was going to say that I'm enjoying it because I'm in second place, but we'll gloss over that bit, shall we?
I'll kick all your butts on the Yahoo one. Serious.
Fighting talk. They're fighting talk. Right, guys, we are pretty much at the end of the show. We're going to try and finish on a positive. So what was your positives from yesterday's game? Let's go with Deepak first. What was your positives?
A lot of positives. I think our defense played well. Blaine Gabbert actually is making a lot of people eat some crow. He had a good game. He's not our savior. We don't know that, but I think it's definitely a positive that we can have this kid come in and take us to a win. So they're my positives.
Brian, give us your positive from the game.
I'm going to touch on something that we haven't really spoke overly about today, which was the secondary. I thought at times they were brilliant. You can say that Julio Jones had a big game, but you know, ultimately he didn't get into the end zone. They did fall asleep on, like I said earlier, on that one drive where they actually did get into the end zone, which was just a short pass to the running back. I've always quite liked Dante Johnson. There's something about him that, you know, adheres me to him. And I think a lot of that probably comes to when he was thrust into the team last season. And I think Cromartie seemed to have a decent game as well. I think Roddy White only had, what, one catch right at the end of the game, I think it was. So potentially, I think we could have a good enough secondary, if you want to put it that way, that if we can sort of beef up some of the pass rush and time our blitz call in well, if, you know, Mangini can dial something up there, that potentially could, you know, go a long way to win us games, and that will give, you know, Mangini and Tom Sula a bit of an interesting selection dilemma going into the, you know, the Seattle and Arizona games for, you know, how they want to, you know, start those guys. You know, are Acker and Brock going to come straight back in, or are Johnson and Cromartie going to stay in, or are they going to mix it up a little bit and see what they've got?
Okay, Gary, give us your positive.
It's going to have to be the real American, Blaine Gabbert. You know, he can run, he can throw, almost scored a touchdown with his legs. And I think, you know, overall, it's nice that after the bye week, we're going to have two hungry quarterbacks wanting to lead this team. And I think that's great for us going forward.
I can't get past Bowman. He had an absolutely great game. He looked like he was having a great game as well. So he is my positive for this week's game. That is it for the episode of the show. Thanks to Gavin Sutton and Kat Vitorino for the two-minute drill questions. Thanks to all our listeners for all your great comments and questions as well. Thanks to Andrew Mitchell, who's looking after the Pick Six Challenge. And thanks to Audio Nautics for our theme music. It's time to say goodbye, boys.
Goodbye, boys.
Bye. See you soon.
On behalf of Brian, Gary and Deepak, I've been Paul McDonald. You've been the audience. And this has been the Frequency 49 Show. Bye for now.